Hey, everybody. As the co-host of your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, it's always delightful to shoot the transatlantic breeze with the UK Midweek Drive team. Together, we aim to provide the best possible audio backdrop for political sanity in the 21st century. This is Phil Lairness, reporting from the middle ground between science and superstition. And you have entered the podcast zone.
It's time for another Jenny Finch Tipperary tale.
As the warm weather arrived, we began to travel more hopefully. Despite our best efforts, we could not finance a house before selling ours. So the plan was to sell, put our stuff in storage, move into a rental property, and then look for somewhere permanent. Seemed a fairly logical way to go about it, especially as travelling to view anywhere was still banned. So we were relying on the web to explore the housing market. Now, I don't know if you are aware, but I am slightly dyslexic, but very dyspraxic. That's a form of spatial dyslexia. I can't follow instructions in a sequence longer than two steps and have never mastered left and right. Hell, on a bad day, I can't do up and down and have been known to shut my head in a door trying to get through. So looking at the obviously idealised descriptions and photographs of properties in Ireland, I was under the misapprehension that Irish houses, cottages and bungalows were similar to properties in England. They are not. But I didn't really understand what that meant until much later. The immediate difference that even I could spot was the amount of garden or land surrounding anything over 50 years old. Most of these were cottages or bungalows and modelled on the same pattern, low single-storey buildings with thick stone walls and three, maybe four windows at the front. A lot of them had sheds that more closely resembled stone outbuildings. And these, we thought, would be very useful as storage for our stuff until we could get unpacked. Generally situated out of town, they boasted anything from half an acre to over eight in some cases. I had not the foggiest idea how big an acre might be, but even I realised eight of them might be too much for us to manage. Alas, this inability to visualise actual dimensions sent us off on totally the wrong path. These cottages listed two or three bedrooms, a kitchen, living room, bathroom, and the roofs of some were boarded and made extra space similar to the studio I had in Saltburn. What I didn't realise was just how small these rooms would be. A bedroom 2.4 metres by 3.6 metres sounded fine, but actually it's barely large enough to fit a bed and a small cupboard. So we pored over the listings, looked at the prices and descriptions, and then worked through the photographs, and in some cases, videos. Now, a number of the older properties had a distinct style of decoration, very dark, brown and green, furniture, curtains, wallpaper and paint, and often with several beds in one room. It was like peering into a time machine. We scratched those off the list. Several of the videos were very illuminating. I was particularly curious about one house where the camera flashed past an open door on the first floor, giving just a glimpse of several road cones blocking the entrance. Not for us, we decided, along with some we labelled fixer-uppers. We were happy to wait and have work done somewhere if it were basically sound and what we were looking for, but some were a bit more than we were willing to tackle. Still, there were enough hopeful prospects for us to think we would be able to find a suitable house without too much trouble, especially as we were cash buyers. The pandemic had shaken up the property market with uncertainty over jobs, making the banks reluctant to lend money. At the same time, there was a growing desire for personal space inside and out as the restrictions imposed by lockdown began to chafe. Then suddenly it was over. Lockdown was lifted and the country went into tiers. We were labelled tier two, not as good as we hoped, but much better than the restrictions of previous weeks. Shops opened, people began to answer the phone occasionally, and with the fine weather came a huge rush of visitors to our little town. At the weekend, we did not dare move the car from outside our house, as it would be impossible to park even after a short run out to the woods for the dogs. Saltburn had always been busy during the school holidays, but had never been as packed as it was then. Our resolve hardened as we contemplated the likely impact of international travel restrictions stretching into the foreseeable future, and we drew up a list of what we really, really wanted in our next home. Fewer stairs, yes. A garden, absolutely. And off-road parking. It's a pity I didn't check a few things, like actual room sizes compared to what we had and what was still full of stuff. Oh, and what the Irish BER rating meant in real terms. But more of that later. We were moving forward, trying to get the house ready for viewings as soon as we could. We were optimistic about the chances of getting away before autumn as we began talks with solicitors, estate agents and friends. And then the second wave hit and everything stopped again. With new restrictions and rules changing almost weekly, it seemed we were moving at full speed but going nowhere. Suddenly, time seemed to speed up as the deadline to move came ever closer. Yet we were still floating in a sea of uncertainty. Moving home was one of the exceptions to the lockdown, but only in England. We were hoping to go abroad, a journey through four countries, each with their own rules. And still no one seemed to know exactly what could be done or answer their phone again. The only course of action was to get on with what we could control and hope the rest worked out. After some difficulty, we finally managed a socially distanced and masked meeting with an estate agent. They liked the house a lot, but noted it was extremely untidy. Yes, trying to pack up a lifetime whilst not being able to throw out or recycle will do that to a home. We settled on a strategy for photographs. Do the front of the house one afternoon and move the boxes to the rear. Then do the back one morning and reverse the process. This required several days of wasted effort, but the results were quite stunning. In fact, I was almost tempted to buy the place myself, it looked so good. Knowing we were hopefully about to get some socially distanced and masked visitors, we focused on tidying and clearing as much as we could, much to the disgust of the dogs who wanted this to all stop and get back to normal. Alas, there was no going back, and we were heading for a totally unknown normal in an unknown place. As we waited for viewings, we began to look for a place to rent in Ireland. This was far more difficult than we'd imagined. Ireland was undergoing something of a housing crisis, and rental properties were rare and highly prized. This pushed up the price, and it was impossible to get anyone to take us seriously. We were English, still in England, with only English bank accounts and no references. We also had three dogs, albeit small dogs, and most landlords didn't want any pets. It looked as if we were heading down a slope with nowhere to land when our wonderful friends in Ireland stepped in. Somehow they managed to persuade a holiday cottage owner to let us have an empty cottage for a long term. It was actually the one place we knew, where we'd stayed on our visit 4 years ago. We breathed a huge sigh, sent off the deposit, and blessed our friends for a miracle. We turned our attention back to the house, and I knew I was falling badly behind. In desperation, I began to heave stuff into big boxes, seal them and label them TBS, to be sorted. Even so, I made a total hash of the whole thing. The whole experience was made worse by the fact my other half was already at work on the kitchen and the china. A wonderful friend had cleared the rooms with us for photographs and was busy on the bedding. I felt like an abject failure, and the memory of those days still haunts me. Despite the barely concealed chaos, most viewers were impressed with the house, and after only 3 weeks, we had a number of offers. We accepted one and then waited for the surveyors, the energy performance certificate, and then the second survey for the purchaser's bank. Everyone was fully booked. Delays were inevitable, and once more, time was slipping by. Then came two hammer blows. We were supposed to be driving to Stranraer to stay overnight before catching the early ferry, but there was a change in the rules. We got a phone call from the hotel telling us our booking was cancelled as non-essential. And then, with no warning, the sale fell through. We were almost out of time. We were heading nowhere. And if we tried to go, we'd be sleeping in a lay-by with three dogs overnight. That was not a good day.
The end of episode 2 of Tipperary Tales. And the motion picture rights can only be a matter of time before they're actually sold, surely, Jenny. I mean, this is cliffhanger stuff par excellence. I mean, forget Bill Bryson's notes from a small island. We've got Jenny Finch's notes from an even tinier island here.
Thank you. I am working on selling film rights, I have to tell you.
Without spoilers, because clearly the fact that you're narrating the tale and actually sharing it with us at present, things getting easier now that we're kind of into an interregnum period in which the World Health Organization are saying never again. And China are saying, well, it may have come from Wuhan labs. It may not have. We don't know. And of course, in this side of the Irish Sea, you may have actually heard Dominic Cumming has actually been spending 7.5 hours effectively sort of giving his perspective on the whole thing.
He has rather, hasn't he? Yes. Not a lot of British news makes it into the papers here, but that certainly did. With a very restrained and good lack of commentary, I noticed. Just the facts, ma'am, and that's what we've got.
Culturally, are you finding that in terms of the way in which obviously you're used to the British media and in particular the northeastern media and in Saltburn and so on, has there been a shift in terms of tenor, in terms of approach, in terms, dare I say it, of professionalism?
I think so. It seems to be much more restrained over here. Whether you get the Irish Mirror or the Irish Times, you tend to get much less hysteria. There is a definite lack of the more unpleasant aspects that were starting to run through the British media. And generally, although people often meet us and say, oh, our government's just as bad as the British government, we just stand and laugh and go, no, it's not, nothing like. People are getting impatient, but they're much more compliant and they're much more willing to stick with things and keep going. And I'm really glad about that. I feel safe here and I feel much more comfortable. Although I have to say, I do miss some of the Irish, some of the news, because it is in Gaelic a lot of the time.
You mean you're not learning the old Gaelic tongue? I'm amazed.
No, I cannot actually find a decent course. Even the courses that they use in school seem ludicrous. We have a friend who has a six-year-old child who's supposedly learning Gaelic at school, and she can say the man eats bread and the woman drinks water and I have a skirt, but she can't say hello, goodbye, and how much is that?
Not too sure how that would fit with contemporary woke credentials, but never mind. That's another tale entirely. You talked about obviously the selling procedures and you talked about the video and so on. This presumably was the first time you'd actually used technology to begin to actually help with that very vital and indeed most stressful of experiences, changing locations, changing house, etc. Did you think the technology helped? Was it a hindrance? Was it a case of not another multi-factor authentication thing I've got to go through?
No, it was such a huge help. All of the estate agents here had multiple photographs on their websites. And as I said, some of them had videos, though some of the videos were just, you looked at it and you went, that's a house of horrors. The one with the cones put across the front of one of the doors was a case in point. But it was really useful to be able to look at stuff. The thing is, there was very little size reference, and that became a major factor when we actually got here.
Doubtless in decades to come, we'll be actually having virtual a walkthrough holographic tours of our base. Or maybe we'll all just be wired up in a particular sort of cell somewhere and work on that premise. There are those who believe that we already are. Jenny, we'll be back yes. with another Tipperary tale in. I think we're looking to do these on a fortnightly basis, although you will be back for initial predictor challenge before that as well. As far as Siren Radio is actually concerned, in the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which we've incorporated this Tipperary tale in, we'll be going straight to Andrew Collins and a series of his thoughts on how we are spoilt beyond words with the current range of great movies that are actually available, courtesy of the great movies system of channels on Virgin, Sky, Freeview, etc. I'm not sure whether you have those things over in Ireland, but what the hey.
Oh, yes. Oh, we do.
Time for another Zoomer on the Midweek Drive for Siren Radio and southsidebroadcasting.podbeam.com. Keeping the COVID-19 bugs at bay.
When it comes to film, you might well say, well, you've already got film critics like Richard Fitzwilliams, who does a weekly slot with us on the Midweek Drive. Yeah, but at the end of the day, we have got the Dwyer of film critics, somebody who basically, I suppose, Barry Norman and the likes of Dillis Powell, etc., will tip their hats in the direction of the awesome Andrew Collins, who's going to chat to us about trends and such like stuff. Andrew, welcome back to the Midweek Drive. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to talk to you, and always good to hear the name of Barry Norman, who I was, you know, was my hero when I was a teenage film critic working at home, just writing reviews for my own pleasure before the internet was invented. And you know, Barry Norman was, you know, he might have been a rock star as far as I'm concerned. If he was on television, I'd have to watch, and I did. And then ended up working not quite alongside him, because he tended to work from home in his later years. But it was amazing to meet him and be around him.
Well, I shall avoid the three-letter phrase, and why not, obviously, because that would be going to all sorts of other areas here. But let's talk about film in general. And as we approach, obviously, the next few days, it's interesting that comedy films have been named the nation's favourite genre. Should we be surprised, or is it a case of we need a laugh? For goodness sakes, we need a laugh, even if we are watching Dominic Cummings doing his seven-hour slot again and again and again.
Yeah, that was too long, that film. But apart from that, we have laughed our way out of lockdown, or at least, you know, we're laughing our way out of lockdown. And I think it's not a surprise that, all films offer escapism, effectively. Anything fictional is an escape. But with comedy, you know, you hope anyway, going in, that you're going to be made to smile. And that's quite a big deal. You know, that you know, doesn't cost very much, a smile, but sometimes quite hard to come by. There's quite a lot of kind of snarky comedy out there, a comedy that fancies itself. It's essentially romantic comedy, you know, not quite the same. But comedy itself works across so many age groups and so many eras. You know, I grew up watching Norman Wisdom films in black and white on television during the school holidays when they used to show them. And I didn't watch them thinking, what year was this made? I just watched it because it was on my television and I liked it, and Norman Wisdom was funny in it. That's all I needed to know. And so I would watch any Norman Wisdom film, any British comedy on television I would watch, which had anyone from any of the Carry On films in it. And so I had a fairly fixed but very, very rich diet of British films. And I didn't even think of them as British. I watched Charlie Chaplin films that they also, again, used to show on television, and didn't necessarily even think, well, this must have been at a time when there was no sound. I didn't make those connections because I was very young. I just loved watching what was being given to me. So in a way, I was too grateful. So perhaps becoming a critic was a way of kind of, you know, reversing the lorry a little bit and saying, well, actually, it's not all that. It can't all be good. All of Charlie Chaplin's films, they can't all be good.
I don't know. In the words of the Lego tale, everything is awesome, or everything is Mr. Grimsdale. One of those two things.
That's true.
This is very much part of research that was carried out for the new network of channels, Great, of course, which is there. And it does perhaps suggest that, as you've been sharing with us today, Andrew, that ultimately it's like good books in the library. We don't necessarily say, oh, that Jonathan Swift, he was writing so many years ago in Georgian times. Gulliver's Travels means nothing today. That Dickens, he's so out of touch, etc. That Edgar Rice Burroughs, he didn't know what he was on about, basically. It's so old that actually these things can fit together. And maybe Einstein was right, that the most persistent of illusions is that past, present and future are separate entities.
Well, that's something that I think about every day. What I find when not being forced to, but having a kind of an obligation to watch films, so that once they're on television, I can say, yes, that film is a 3-star film, or no, that film is a 2-star film, or a 1-star film. It's a terrible, terrible responsibility. But, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, and I have to live that. That's my cross to bear. I watch films in an analytical way, often, not over analytical, but thinking, well, are people going to like this? Is this good? Has it got a good enough ending? Are the characters interesting in it? There are lots of different ways to measure a film. But what I do find, and what I have been finding, especially over the last year, is that I've been drawn to old films. And I really do mean old films in the sense of black and white films, film noir from around, you know, the post-war period, which I still absolutely love. You know, I could sit down and watch Double Indemnity 100 times. And they're the films that I find myself drawn to. And so I realise I'm now very lucky to live in an age of multiple TV channels and streaming services. So I can actually spend all day, if I want to, watching film noir or John Wayne films. And that's a brilliant thing. We're so lucky. I think younger people particularly don't realise how lucky they are. And I knew that this would happen to me at some stage in my life, that I would say that, but I really do believe it. And so I get a great kick out of saying, you should really watch this film. It's not much of a title, Baby Driver. What does Baby Driver mean? Is it about somebody who drives a baby around? No, it's a brilliant, stylish
action movie. It's got Lily Cole in it. Yes. If it's got to be a winner, basically.
Yeah, sure. And it begins with a car chase. It begins with an escape from a bank in a getaway car. And it's just beautifully done. It's brilliantly choreographed. It's like a ballet almost, a sort of tire squaring ballet. And I would recommend Baby Driver to anyone. And I get the feeling it slightly went under the radar when it came out in the old conventional days of 2017. And I think now people should rush to great movies to watch Baby Driver. It is absolutely classic. And just sort of look away when Kevin Spacey's on.
The soundtrack alone is makes it worthwhile. Now, this is part of, again, of the launch week lineup for great movies. So we've got great movies classics as well. I was intrigued to find that What's Eating Gilbert Grape actually appears. I mean, a personal favourite of mine, but one which is often underrated from the 20th century and indeed the early days of Leonardo DiCaprio, if memory serves.
Yeah, really good sort of launch title for great movies classic, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, because that's Johnny Depp. I mean, you know, the young version of Johnny Depp, even younger version of Leonardo
DiCaprio. Before he met Amber Heard, let's not go there.
No. And Juliette Lewis is in it. And, you would say now that it's about somebody with mental health issues. We'd probably be a little bit more kind of sympathetic towards it. Set in Iowa. And it's about these brothers who have a morbidly obese mother, which is really interesting. It's a really interesting slice of life. And I would highly recommend that. And I think that does fall neatly into the genre of great movies classic.
And somebody who certainly in contemporary times would probably have actually not had to change his name at all, because he would simply have actually sort of addressed the woke issue perfectly well as Marion Morrison. John Wayne's birthday sequences are being put forward. Not sure how the Duke would actually have felt about the current gender fluidity issues and wokeness, but it's always nice to see some of the classics, including She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, which is a great one.
It's a genuine classic. I know people who I respect and love who don't like Westerns, and I understand it. You can't make somebody like a Western, but you don't have to try very hard with me. And She Wore a Yellow Ribbon, which is part of a kind of cavalry trilogy made by John Ford with John Wayne in it, that I could sit down and watch right now. But I also like the fact that they're showing Jet Pilot from 1957, which I haven't seen, which is something that I'm almost, loath to admit. So I'm going to watch that for the first time. How about that?
two movies which I always like to flag up when we do another program called Resonance Rewind as greats in their own way. And one perhaps a little underrated, another one has gradually reached that stage, both by Frank Capra, Lost Horizon, and indeed the wonderful It's a Wonderful Life. I think both of those are kind of epics. I'm sure It's a Wonderful Life will be re-emerging around about Christmas time. But yeah, Lost Horizon, I think, often underrated. Let's throw in Goodbye, Mr. Chips as well. Maybe it's my academic background.
Yeah, I love that. I met and interviewed the son of Robert Donat once for Radio 4. That was nice. Yes, it's one of those things, Lost Horizons. I remember my granddad took my younger sister to see that as her first film at the cinema. Mm. And she begged him to let her leave halfway through because she thought it was too loud and didn't like it. So there you go. Slightly different experience for my poor sister, Melissa.
Maybe it was the Peter O'Toole musical version they were saying. Maybe it's something
completely
different.
It might have been, actually. Maybe it was, because that is pretty grim.
The world is a circle without a beginning and nobody knows where it really ends. But let's move on from that. In terms of how people can actually access great movies, it's on Freeview, of course, 33, Sky 321, Virgin 45 and Freesat 302. And you can also find them, of course, Great Movies Classics also on the on those channels, 51 for Freeview and so on. So they're all out and about there. In terms of technology, I mean, is this one of the things, Andrew, that, you know, obviously the Blu-ray disc, et cetera, is one thing, but actually even in terms of the transmission of films, that maybe back in the day when you were watching old films, the quality of the transmission wasn't great, whereas in this time, it quite literally is great, and you're seeing it pretty much as they were originally made.
Yeah, I think, again, we are spoiled, you know, and if you do watch an old film on an older channel or a channel that's more about classic movies and it's not a very good print, you start to notice now. I think it's perfectly fine. I think we who sit at home to watch these things or buy them on DVD, if we so wish, and, you know, we deserve better. In some cases, you do sometimes sit down to watch a film and you just think, this is just not up to scratch. You know, all of the Hitchcock films pretty much have been remastered, so you can watch, you know, watch Hitchcock anytime you like and know that it's going to look beautiful. But, you know, some of the black and white films in the early Technicolor days, even early Technicolor was not as great as we would expect it to be now. There is a little bit of a murky area. But if you're a historian, which we all are, let's face it, we're all historians of film because we like films, then you kind of put up with it.
Absolutely. We haven't really mentioned the musicals as opposed to Lost Horizon. I suppose that's something else which could open up people's happiness and so on.
Yes, you're right. Absolutely right. I love, you know, I've watched Oklahoma recently, and I think that's coming on television again. And Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and, you know, Calamity
Jane. Not sure whether the rape of the seven Sabine women actually is the way forward these days, but never mind.
It's fiction. And it's a musical. So there are a lot more other things in it which are not very realistic.
Andrew, it's been awesome as we knew it would be. It's always a delight to actually welcome you on the programme. Just a quick reminder in terms of how people can access some of these great films. You said it so many times. We can actually sort of read a crate again. How can they actually do them?
Well, great movies, and great is followed by an exclamation mark. So look out for that. Freeview 33, Sky 321, Virgin 425 and Freesat 302. Good, good entries in the home viewing market.
So we'll wrap up with those two final questions, the inevitable ones. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Yes, I like it. I can't. Your head is in front of the words, obviously. But and also, when the police car went by outside, it suddenly made me feel like it was real.
Mm. Well, so I like to always add a bit of actuality. I call it the radio vérité approach to life, really. That's the key thing.
You know? I can go with that.
So I take it, Andrew Collins, you will return in the not too distant future. Will you kindly come back?
Yeah, anytime. You know, I'll talk about films, of course.
Partnerships. It's one of the key aspects of the 21st century. And certainly when it comes to sport, that very much is the heart of all manner of wonderful successes and wins, etc. And as indeed we are approaching the playoff weekend, etc., what better way to actually alert folk to the partnership between the English Football League and Smart Energy GB, and to actually talk about some of the findings of this particular survey by football fans across the globe, etc. We're delighted to welcome back to Midweek Drive the awesome soul from indeed Smart Energy GB. It's the fabulous Fleur Lawton. How are you, Fleur?
Hi, Alex. I'm really good, thank you.
Excellent. So, I mean, this particular research, which certainly sort of suggests that football fans, or soccer, if you're in the United States, are keen to actually get involved with saving energy and making big changes to their lifestyle, which can only be good news when it comes to Smart Energy GB, can't it, Fleur?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you said, we've partnered with the English Football League and we've been talking to the fans of the six teams that are competing in the playoff finals this weekend. And we've been asking them about their behaviours at home. And 61% are saying that they've introduced more energy saving habits. And that is really good news. It's things like simple things that anybody can do, like turning off your lights or, you know, turning the thermostat down by 1 degree and things like that. Really simple things that anybody can do in their home. And it's really good news. We're also seeing that about 64% have got a smart meter installed already. That's above the national average. That is really good news. But that still means there's an awful lot of people who don't have a smart meter fitted and aren't benefiting from them.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, looking ahead to certainly fans in our own region, Lincoln City, obviously a little bit nervous, a little bit tense. They go up against Blackpool. Could be quite a fascinating sort of line from that point of view. But it is a case of if you can bottle the energy that certainly comes across from fans. And you know, most people are agreed it's good that they're actually allowed to see the match and be live in the stadium, at least from that point of view, that obviously can be tremendously impactful. But in the same way in our kind of day-to-day lives, presumably, Fleur, this is something whereby installing a smart meter, relatively straightforward to do, and it's something which, again, can make a huge difference.
Absolutely. I mean, getting a smart meter fitted is really simple. It takes less time for penalties to be played. So it's a really good move to do. They are basically digital gas and electricity meters, and they're being fitted in homes and small businesses across Great Britain at the minute. Being digital means that they automatically send your meter readings to your energy supplier. You know, if you're like me, my electricity meter's right up on the ceiling in the kitchen. There's no need for me to be clambering up there to take meter readings. No need to be wasting time to do that. And you also get an accurate bill. That's really important. So no more estimates. With a smart meter, you can access some of the cheapest energy deals that are out there, as well as being able to understand your energy much better. As I say, you know, football fans are already doing things to, like turning off the lights, that are helping to save energy. They're obviously interested in it. But the great thing about the smart meter is that it comes with a little screen that shows you in pounds and pence how much things cost. So it really makes it visible. It helps you to understand what's using energy in your home and how you can make, as I say, simple changes that can make a difference to that too.
So you're really looking at a final score of carbon zero, nil, emissions, nil, et cetera, in terms of the sort of line, which, of course, would take us to a penalty shootout, which, I don't know, let's not progress with that metaphor, because that would be a whole range of things from that point of view. The Save It Challenge, I mean, that very much fits into this, but talk us through the Save It Challenge, Fleur, and how that can impact as well on our listener.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got EFL and playoff legends Rob Green and Dean Windass, and they've teamed up to highlight the sort of small changes that football fans can make around the home to really bring their energy bills under control. You know, we know that people want to do this, and it's giving them simple ideas of how to do it. And Rob and Dean have been great in terms of sort of looking at simple ways to do things. So one of the big things is, you know, boiling your kettle. Don't fill your kettle right to the top if you're just making one cup of tea. It just makes absolute sense to have, you know, make it for one cup and use it when you boil it. Don't do what I do too often. I will admit to this, is boil it and then forget about it and go back and have to do it all again. And again, smart meters can just help you to see that, to understand that so much better. And it's particularly important as well for those people on prepay meters, you know, token meters. Token meters, they're quite inconvenient. You know, you could be running out of energy anytime, maybe in the middle of a match, which is really not good news. But with smart prepay, you can top up from the comfort of your own home. You can do it over the phone. You can do it on your iPad, wherever. And you can do that so much easier than sort of having to go to the shop to get a token.
Which is great news. Flo, I'm still recovering from the notion that as head of public affairs at SCGB, you actually boil your own kettle. I mean, surely you've got people to actually do that for you, or indeed technology to look after the whole thing. This is amazing. You know, it's outrageous. You know, you've got so many things to actually work on. It's not surprising you occasionally forget to actually switch the kettle back off.
I wish I had people to do it, Alex. I wish.
There is, of course, a video that accompanies this particular piece, which also kind of provides us with some energy-saving tips. How can people access that particular video, Flo?
If you go to our website at smartenergygb.org, you can find all the information there.
And you mentioned, of course, Dean Windass, who back in 2008, a very iconic moment for all Hull City fans. He, in the first half, scored the what became the only goal in the playoff match against Bristol City. And, of course, Hull City have managed to get up to the Championship this season without battling through the playoffs. So interesting news from that perspective. But I've got to ask you, Fleur, even though I appreciate that you might not necessarily have the incisive footballing knowledge that we appreciate, two kind of fairly critical closing questions. First of all, do you have a particular team that you support yourself in the world of football? Is it a case of whichever one wins?
Well, this weekend I will be supporting Newport County because I'm in South Wales, so and my son is a Cardiff supporter, so I can't be seen to be said supporting Swansea because of the big rivalry there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going for Newport County this weekend. Yeah,
excellent. Well, that's good news. And clearly I'll take it as read that you'll be looking for Lincoln City as well to do well on that sort of basis. But you
fingers
know, who
crossed
knows?
For everybody.
Maybe we'll work through that. And that leads us neatly around to the next sort of critical question is, have you had a recently interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
It's been great. Thank you, Alex.
So therefore, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future with more SEGB energy saving tips?
Of course you can.
In the joys of the airshow world, of course, there are fewer legends who are more important than the awesome Mike Ling. I was blessed and privileged to actually meet up with Mike back in the Lincolnshire days a few years ago, when he was actually greeted with awe when he came down with the Red Arrows and did all sorts of fabulous things there. And we're delighted to say that actually to talk about the latest notion of airshows from the armchair, we have indeed the aforementioned Mike Ling with us. How are you, Mike?
Very good morning, Alex. I'm very well. Thank you very much. And that's quite an introduction.
Oh, we know that you're going to live up to it because you always deliver, which is great. Now, the virtual air show, you might sort of think, but it's not the same. Armchair air shows and working through that. But if we actually look at some of the sort of normal routines that we've had, obviously not last year, but in a normal summer, more than 5 million people would attend more than 100 air shows and aerial displays across the UK. That's a significant number by anybody's rating.
It is, and air shows are very popular. I think it's the second biggest spectator event in the UK after football. So it's very popular. And of course, it appeals to all ages. You know, I was inspired as a youngster, and it goes all the way up to octogenarians who still love watching aeroplanes and just are amazed by what happens in the skies.
And this obviously brings us neatly around to what's happening this bank holiday Saturday, of course, in which we have the charity Aerobility putting on Armchair Air Show. Now, that doesn't mean that you actually have to attach props and propellers to your armchair and you'll fly through the air, does it? I mean, just want to clarify that.
No, I don't think an armchair would be very, very aerodynamic. So luckily, we stay on the ground in our armchairs for this one.
But talk us through what people could actually expect from this particular aspect, which is obviously part of Biggin Hill's fabulous sort of offering here. Spitfires from their heritage hangar, the Battle of Britain Memorial flight. I mean, that's just the tip of the iceberg, really.
Well, this I'll say where it all began. We started this idea last spring at the start of the first lockdown in 2020, where you know we needed people to be able to scratch their airshow itch during the restrictions of the pandemic. So we came up with the idea of the Armchair Airshow, which was essentially bring content to people's living rooms where they could at least still get involved with aviation, but more importantly, support the fabulous charity Aerobility, which is a really important charity for giving disabled people the opportunity to learn how to fly an aeroplane. And it really gives them a drive on how they can do something different and actually really relieve them from the restrictions of their disability. So it's a fabulous charity. We reached, I think it was in six figures in terms of the number of people who watched last year's show. We did it at Blackbush Airfield, which is where Aerobility are based. But this year we were very kindly supported by Biggin Hill Airport, which is actually my hometown. So I'm actually very excited about being back in my hometown. And it's kind of a hybrid event this year. So we've actually got some real aeroplanes. Now the restrictions have lifted slightly. We've got some real aeroplanes involved as well, which is going to be even more exciting than last year.
Now, Mike, you're the Red Arrow's longest serving pilot, which again is a record, which I'm sure will never be broken. It'll always be in the sort of line from that. Do you find that gives you, I mean, since it's an obvious question, does that give you a unique insight when you're doing commentary, when you're actually sort of seeing what is actually being carried out by these quite phenomenal manoeuvres in the skies?
What I enjoyed about the Red Arrows is when I was 3 years as a display pilot, then I went to be the commentator for 6 years. And I found it really useful having lived and breathed it as a display pilot to be able to sort of pass that information across to the crowd. What was then even better was then going back into the cockpit as a display pilot, having been the commentator. I kind of carried with me knowing what was on happening on the ground in terms of crowd reactions and what the crowd enjoyed. So it was almost better going the other way, having been the commentator, to then go and do the display. But I do find air shows really interesting, enjoyable, and inspiring. You know, I grew up watching the Red Arrows, which is why I wanted to be a pilot. And I'm hoping that in my time with the Red Arrows, then a lot of other youngsters will have done the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of my now graduates, of course, Ben Lewis, was beside himself with excitement when he actually said, "It's Mike Ling, Mike Ling," back in the day, a few years ago now. He's now doing great other material. We've also, of course, got on this particular event, you've got the Royal Air Force Typhoon Display Team. Any sort of teasers in terms of what people can expect from the Typhoon Display Team?
Well, it's a new display pilot this year. Sainty, his name is. He's putting on a good performance. I've not seen it live. I've seen the very unique and exclusive footage that the Typhoon Display Team have sent the Armchair Air Show. And it's very exciting. Really incredible aeroplane to fly. I was very lucky to have a passenger ride in one a few years ago. It is a stunning bit of machinery. And the display that it puts on is always a crowd favourite. Lots of noise, lots of G, some very tight manoeuvres. And it really is a fantastic thing to watch.
Those daring young men in their flying machines, to quote a time which long before you sort of were encountering the whole system, etc. Finally, we've got Rich Goodwin's Jet Pits, of course, the Royal Air Force Aerobatic Team and the Red Arrows. I mean, this is just going to be a win-win situation. How can people actually get involved, Mike, with watching the whole virtual air show online, the Armchair Air Show?
Yeah, well, it's 2 o'clock on Saturday, on the 29th of May. And you can actually just go to armchairairshow.com for everything, whether that be actually viewing the show, or we've got an auction going where you can bid on a lot of really unique prizes. There's a signed red suit from Red One, who at the time was Red One, is actually now the officer commanding in the Red Arrows. But it's the suit he was wearing where we got a stunning photo over Petra in Jordan back in 2017. It's been signed by all of that 2017 team. There are other brilliant auction lots on there. So armchairairshow.com, you can view the show, and it'll actually stay on there in perpetuity. So it will be there to watch on YouTube through armchairairshow.com. And there are other ways of donating to the charity, because at the end of the day, this is what it's all about, supporting Aerability, who do a fantastic job for disabled flyers.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, it's been fantastic, as we knew it would be. A genuine privilege to connect with your good self today. We've got two final questions for you. They're fairly standard for the midweek drive. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
Have I had a very interesting Zoomer?
Indeed. I mean, it's the term we used to say telephonic chat. We used to have a general sort of one-to-one thing. So let's use the medium of Zoom and let's say, has the Zoomer been okay for you?
The Zoom has been very good, thank you.
In which case, can we look forward to featuring you again in the not-too-distant future? Will you return?
Yeah, please have me back on whenever.
Mike Ling, legend. That's all I have to say. Legend. From the Red Arrows, ace commentator, and, of course, aeromobility soul extraordinaire. Huge thanks. Be well and happy flying.
Thanks, Alex. Take care.
Well, the old saying is one person's meat is another person's poison, or indeed other vegetable equivalent, perhaps. But the same thing might apply to clothes, specifically when it comes around to the range of clothes that are actually out there and how actually sustainable secondhand clothing is really part and parcel of where we should be heading in the 21st century. Spock have recently produced some data that suggests that the number of items and fashion items sold on its website has increased by a third on average, and future predictions show that by shopping on marketplaces like Spock, Britons could potentially be saving 1.2 million tonnes of plastic, 7.8 million tonnes of steel, and 0.7 million tonnes of aluminium. Now, to actually address some of the rationales behind this, who better than international interiors therapist extraordinaire, the wonderful Suzanne Roynan. How are you, Suzanne?
I'm really well, Alex. Thank you for having me here.
Excellent. So some of those mind-blowing figures in terms of things that can effectively be addressed and put into place with respect to just recycling our clothes and getting into buying and selling second-hand clothes, quite phenomenal, really. Were you surprised?
Oh, I tell you what, I love the statistic that came up from the Spock Secondhand Effect report, which said that the equivalent amount of emissions saved by people in the UK is the same as driving around the world in a car 574 times, yeah, or 60 return trips to the moon. I mean, how incredible is that? How do they find these things out in the first place? But yes, to save that amount of CO2 is incredible. And it's good for us. It's good for the planet. So what's not to love?
Now, clearly, one of the fantastic texts that you've actually produced is Welcome Home, How Stuff Makes or Breaks Your Relationship. And clearly, you're an expert in terms of this. So people who are listening to this have kind of gone into the habit of saying, oh, I can't be bothered going down to the charity shop or getting secondhand stuff. I need to get it new, etc. What advice would you give to them?
Well, you know, the fact is that there is so much stuff out there that is swilling around. There's stuff in people's wardrobes which isn't being used from one year to the next, and other people who would gladly pay for that. So why would you race off to the store to buy something new when you can actually get your hands on it in the next couple of days by buying through somewhere like Spock or in another online marketplace? You know, it's there. It's waiting for you to buy it. And you know, I'm a big fan of buying secondhand. My clients and I term it vintage rather than secondhand, but you know, it's a good thing to do. And if it keeps stuff out of landfill and you get to wear an outfit that nobody else has got, I think that's a really good reason for not going to the store.
Now, in addition to this, of course, Suzanne, you've also produced 6 fantastic tips in terms of how you can carry out a sustainable spring clean. And with the weather being like it is to at present, well, why wouldn't you actually do some indoor cleaning? Just a thought. One of those, of course, is always think sustainably and give pre-loved items a new home. Would you like to just talk us through that?
Yeah, we've really got to think much more sustainably about what we're doing with the stuff that we don't want anymore. And, you know, you've got all sorts of places to make use, reuse, repurpose, recycle clothes. And of course, if you're selling them, then you're getting more money back into your pocket. But the thing is, if we're sending anything to landfill, then it's just wasting resources. And the fact is, we need them. We need them on the planet right now, environmentally, socially, and, you know, practically financially too. So it's got to be well worth doing it just to make a difference to yourself and the environment for our children and our grandchildren.
One which initially I thought, oh, is this for the OCD, the obsessive compulsive disorders amongst us, with ordering your wardrobe? But actually, it does make sense the way you actually explain it. Would you like to just expand a little, Suzanne?
Yeah, so if you get your wardrobe so that your long clothes are at one side and your short clothes are at the other, and you graduate them up. I mean, I like to do them in colour as well, just so that I can see anything I want at a glance. But you actually create yourself a little bit of hidden storage space underneath the shorter clothes, which means that you can streamline your bedroom even more. And I think that's always a good thing.
Now, I tend to always refuse the offer of a clothes hanger when it's actually provided in certain stores, etc. But you should also think about the clothes hangers you use, it would seem.
Yeah, I always recommend that my clients use the velvet or flock covered versions of a clothes hanger because they're strong. And the great thing is that clothes won't slip off them. You know, there's nothing worse than finding your favourite top in a scrunched up bundle in the bottom of the wardrobe. So, you know, if you can then organize your clothes, you've got a nice line of identical hangers there along the top, then your brain isn't being assaulted by a jumble of orange hangers, yellow hangers, hangers from this store, the wooden hangers, the ones that you had from the dry cleaners. You know, a jumble and mess of hangers is going to just mess with your head as soon as you open the wardrobe door. It might only be for a second, but it does have an impact.
And speaking about impact, interesting, you also suggest that your clothes deserve a fresh, clean space as well as your good self. So it's important to actually clean out cupboards and drawers and storage areas as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I've never come across a wardrobe that doesn't have some dust or dust bunnies in the back of it. So, you know, once you've taken everything out, then give it a spritz, give it a clean, hoover everything out, nice wipe down. Put your stuff back in and you'll feel better about it. And your clothes will really benefit from being in that cleaner environment.
Which certainly applies to all sorts of storage areas from that point of view. Finally, of course, giving yourself time and focus on the items that don't bring you joy, perhaps. Presumably that's a case of really being thankful for the pleasure that certain items have actually given you. And then maybe gracefully saying it's time to pass them on.
Absolutely. And my version of this is that anything you don't use, need or love, don't keep around you. If something makes you miserable or it reminds you of a disappointing occasion or something that was painful or sad, there's no possible benefit to you in you keeping that in your space. So if you let that go, you're making space for something new and better to come to you, and it will, wherever you find it.
Yes, the unique nature of the universe in which we live. So, as we've said, the survey by Spock, not to be confused with a character from Star Trek or indeed a child psychologist, it has got an H in it, has to be stated. There are folk who might sort of think, oh, is this a Vulcan approach to life? It may well be, but not at present. So it's Spock. Can be found where? Where would you actually recommend that people could actually go for this mobile marketplace, Suzanne?
So you can find the app on your Play Store or on Apple Shop, or you can go to the website, which is spock.com.
And from your own perspective, best way to actually follow the fabulous work of your good self as an international interiors therapist and indeed author of Welcome Home, How Stuff Makes or Breaks Your Relationship.
Oh, you're very kind. So interiorstherapy.com. So interiors has an S on it, interiorstherapy.com. And I'm Suzanne Roynan.
Absolutely right, Suzanne. We've got two final questions for you. We kind of need to put them in play because actually we've learned to appreciate them and they bring us a certain amount of joy, and hopefully the interviewees as well. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the programme today?
I have loved Zooming with you, especially your background.
Well, there you go. So the next critical question is, can we look forward to featuring you again in the not too distant future? Will you return?
I will happily return and we can go in depth into interiors therapy and all of the amazing things that you can achieve with it.